I'm Celeste Headlee, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Michelle Martin is away, and it's time to visit the barbershop. That's where the guys talk about what's in the news, what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel, sports editor at The Nation, Dave Zirin, Corey Dade, a contributing editor for The Root. They're all here with me in Washington, D.C. And joining us from St. Louis, Mario Loyola. He's a contributor to the National Review and with the Texas Public Policy Foundation. Okay. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, C. Headlee. How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm making it.
Good.
Hey, everybody. Welcome
hey,
to the
hey.
Shop. How we doing?
What's up?
Que pasa, que pasa?
Hey, Mario Loyola. C. Dade. Wow, this is like my birthday. All right, well, you know what? I don't know about you guys, but I'm kind of stiff. I stayed up all night on that game. That's San Antonio Spurs. They dug in. They went in, and they took game one from the Miami Heat. Dave.
Yes.
DZ, Dave Zirin. You weren't excited about this matchup. Did last night change your mind at all?
Oh, I think it's going to be a fantastic series. Last night did change my mind. I love the efficiency of both teams. I love the fact that the ball was actually going in the hoop, unlike the conference finals in the East and the West. And frankly, I love the strategy of the San Antonio Spurs, which is collapse on superstar LeBron James. He only scored 18 points last night, about 10 below his season average, and force Miami's three-point shooters to beat them. Miami only made one of their last 9 three-point shots, and they lost by 4. That was the game.
Can we take a listen? We actually, Tony Parker talked about the Spurs strategy. This is what he said after the game.
Drop it.
Obviously, LeBron is unbelievable. Dwayne Wade was playing great. We just try to contain them and try to pack the paint and make sure they take jump shots.
That's exactly what Dave is talking about. So, Jimmy, how do you feel about LeBron James? Is he your former hometown hero? How'd you think about watching him play?
You know what it is?
Uh-oh. This... That's a sensitive question.
No, it's not, because I'm not one of those people that's like rah-rah LeBron. You know, I'm rah-rah free agency for a young black man, but I'm not rah-rah LeBron or rah-rah Cleveland, though. Cleveland, I love you. Sweetheart, my grandmother, I love you. But this is one of them things like LeBron. You know what this is? We're watching LeBron become Neo. You know, and he
Neo
had...
in the Matrix?
Right. As in the Matrix, he was immature and impetuous, but suddenly there's that Larry Fishburne moment where he believes, and we're watching
we're going
this
deep here.
With our own two eyes, where he's growing into his role as a champion. You know, I believe Miami is going to take this, but I believe it's going to be war. I believe it's going to be like Rutgers. I mean, it's going to be real, real serious. C. Dade, Corey Dade, how do you see this series playing out?
Well, usually, you know, the Spurs are the most boring team in professional sports.
Nice.
But last night they showed me something different. I mean, they were, you know, that, you know, Coach Popovich is just, he's brilliant. He can morph that team into anything it needs to be to suit the opponent. And, you know, I agree with you. I think this is going to be a time where LeBron has to innovate and come up with a way to get open. I think at the end of the day, I think the Heat will figure it out, and they'll take it in 7.
Super Mario, Mario Loyola, you are the Texan in the shop, so I guess that means you're going with the Spurs to take. I'm sorry, it's going with the Spurs to take it all, right?
Oh no! Wait a moment.
Okay.
This puts all of my friends in Texas against all of my family and my cubanitos in Miami.
Oh, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a problem. I think that Miami's going to take this one.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. Well, you know what? Let's keep it moving. Now over to the ball field. ESPN is reporting that at least 20 players, including, I was going to say something editorial, but I won't, Alex Rodriguez.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Ryan Braun. They're tangled up in allegations of using performance-enhancing drugs. Ay, caramba. Color me surprised, Dave. You know, break this down for us, Dave.
Absolutely. It starts by understanding that there is a clinic in South Florida, an anti-aging clinic called Biogenesis, that's not run by a doctor.
No.
That's always a clinic want to go to.
Right.
A gentleman by the name of Anthony /Tony Bosch. And, well, from Chris Bosch to Tony Bosch. You see the continuity here.
Nice
on the
segue.
Nice segue.
You should be in radio.
Yeah, thank you, sir.
Go ahead.
And the main issue here, though, is that what this shows is that Major League Baseball is about to suspend maybe as many as 2 or even 3 dozen players for performance-enhancing drug use without getting one positive test from any of these players.
Mm.
So one of the things this highlights more than anything is that despite the literally millions of dollars being spent on a testing program in Major League Baseball to quote-unquote catch the cheaters, it's just not working.
Did I read right that you think we should legalize performance performance enhancing drugs. Did I read that right, or was that just an early morning goof?
I hadn't had my coffee quite yet. On ESPN calling out the reefer madness about performance enhancing drugs, saying that I think that the system is broken,
mm-hmm.
and so the solution lies on the extremes of one side or the other. Either we have to do genetic coding, testing, biological passports, testing players, their blood on a daily basis. That's one solution. The other solution is you decriminalize it, regulate it, turn it into a public health issue, and put it under the auspices of Major League Baseball.
But you know what you're actually saying, David? I mean, if we go with that, then we're talking about the end of personal excellence. We're talking about really the end of the true champion as we know it. And we're encouraging, and we're also encouraging kids to take dope. You know, we encourage them to take.
You're saying you have to or you can't compete.
I'm saying
that the system is currently broken, so we need to think.
So break it some more.
So first of all, no. Sometimes you got to tear it down and start it all over again. And two things. First of all, personal excellence has never really existed in Major League Baseball, for whether you're talking about the color line before 1947, whether you're talking about the fact that greenies were passed around locker rooms like they were M&Ms in the 60s
before
and
70s. Before we get too far,
you're going to get some email behind that.
I want to go to Mario here, because Mario, you have a very different perspective on this from Dave's, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that it's not that different necessarily. I mean, I think that cheating needs to be stigmatized, and there's also the public health issue. On the other hand, this is another case that we see in so many other areas of American life of overregulation and of too many rules and of too many things being within the ban on performance-enhancing drugs. And so I think that one angle that I'd like to see more discussion of is the fact that this is all seems to be up to Bud Selig, and so it's very arbitrary, and rules don't work when they're sort of arbitrary.
Okay. And in case people wonder where I read David, I read him at thenation.com.
Oh, thank you very much.
You're welcome, bro.
Yes.
Corey Dade.
Well, you know, I wasn't surprised. I mean, this is baseball. You know, for years, they weren't testing at all. And now in this case, you know, they're going hard without actually having any test results like Dave's talking about. You know, these players deserve due process. If you're going to suspend them, you got to do it based on positive testing for performance-enhancing drugs. That said, you know, the entire, you know, baseball sport is just riddled with this, and same thing in football. And so, you know, as long as you are a multi-million-dollar athlete, there will always be ways to get ahead of the testing science, period.
Mm. You're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by culture critic Jimmy Israel, journalist Corey Dade, policy analyst and columnist Mario Loyola, and sports editor Dave Zirin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Celeste. Well, it's not just Major League Baseball dealing with controversial issues. The Obama administration.
Segway.
Yeah, they're throwing elbows and catching flack for listening in on your phone calls. Wait a second. Not quite. I mean, they're not listening in to you order your pizza or anything like that, are they, Celeste?
No, they might. What's come out this week is that
to the best of our knowledge,
the NSA, which is the National Security Agency, has been collecting data from Verizon and possibly other companies about phone calls made in the U.S. This would include the names, the phone numbers of the callers, the locations, perhaps, of where you're calling from, and then the lengths of the calls. Administration officials say it is established policy, it was approved by Congress, and it's justified for national security. Let's take a listen here, though, to Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein, chairwoman of the Senate Intelligence Committee. Now, here she is speaking on Thursday about this practice.
Terrorists will come after us if they can. And the only thing that we have to deter this is good intelligence, to understand that a plot is being hatched and to get there before they get to us.
This may be one of the few things Democrats and Republicans in Washington agree on. Republican Senator and frequent administration critic Lindsey Graham defended the practice, but the Washington Post has reported that the federal government has also been collecting information from internet companies like Google, Facebook, and Apple. Look, I'm seeing a bunch of blank faces. Is anyone here surprised by this? Jimmy, surprised?
I'm not. I mean, for me, it's another example of Obama cribbing, you know, Bush-era stuff. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know if we should give him all the credit for this. I mean, he's just continuing some Bush stuff. That's it. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm scared of what it means. I'm scared of what it implies. But it's one of those things that might just be an evil for a greater good. I'm not sure. Corey, you want first in?
Well, I think the idea that they are, it's the PRISM program, and if PRISM, where they are taking, they're using everything they're tapping, the federal government is tapping directly into the servers of about 9 of the biggest internet companies in the world, including the ones you mentioned, Celeste, also Yahoo. And I think, you know, the illusion that, you know, Americans have privacy needs to kind of be, you know, done away with. But on the public side, as far as the public is concerned, this may force a clearer discussion about the balance between the right to privacy and the need to evolve to protect national security.
Mm.
Now, what's interesting is there's no outrage on Capitol Hill right now.
Mm,
there's
zero.
Very little outrage. And that's because no one wants to be seen as being soft on terrorism.
Mm.
And so it's going to, you know, I think the public reaction is the thing that will probably foment a more serious dialogue. But, you know, it's interesting about President Obama's position. You know, before he got elected, he was opposed to this.
Mm-hmm.
He was the anti-Bush candidate. Now, you know, my sources in the administration told me something. You know, when you start getting briefings, daily security briefings about the threats, it is out of this world. And every president changes their position on that stuff.
Mario Loyola, is this an overreach?
No, it certainly isn't. I think that the story here is the negative reaction that the media has had to the revelation of the story and the fact that there was a very serious leak of a top secret court order to Glenn Greenwald of The Guardian that started all this. I think, look, Obama's been a victim of the fantasy that he and his supporters cultivated for many years, that the Bush administration's approach to national security and the rule of law was somehow out of bounds and unconstitutional and unlawful and all this. And now that they have to embrace many of the same policies, they're sort of hoist by their own petard. And to me, it's delightful to see the New York Times come out with a criticism that's absolutely as childish and unreasonable of this president as they were routinely of the Bush administration for many years. I mean, the fact of the matter is that this metadata analysis is really non-invasive, and it's a crucially vital tool of national security analysis. It's like when your credit card starts showing charges in South Africa, and your credit card company calls and says, "Hey, we know that you're not in South Africa because you just filled up at the Exxon station around the corner from your house.
Yeah.
So we're halting your card.
Dave,
do you feel your privacy has been invaded?"
I think
Mario needs to read his Ben Franklin. "Those who would surrender liberty for security deserve neither." And I remember who I heard quote that in 2008. It was candidate Barack Obama.
That's right.
And the let me finish.
Hold on.
Please. Thank you.
Hold
on. Thank you. The problem here is two things. First of all, Barack Obama, yes, this was happening under the Bush administration, but by every account, the degree to which the Obama administration has mined data dwarfs what the Bush administration did. That's the first problem. The second problem is the ferocity with which President Obama and his administration has gone after whistleblowers. Once again, not only dwarfing what the Bush administration and frankly every other president did, but also to a degree of which that I think we should find unconscionable. Barack Obama once being someone who has supported whistleblowers when he ran in 2008.
I will say though, there's a difference. Don't confuse whistleblowers with leakers.
All right. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Can I come back on that?
No, you can't because it's going to break out into a knife fight. Let's move on. First Lady Michelle Obama, she made news this week, not for her behind, her bangs, or her biceps, gratefully, but for going head to head with a heckler.
That's right. The FLOTUS was speaking at a private event. An activist named Ellen Sturtz interrupted her and demanded that President Obama take more action on gay rights. We'll hear here a part of the First Lady's response.
"One of the things that I don't do well is this."
You really need to watch the whole video to understand what happened. But the First Lady left the podium and essentially told the heckler she had a choice. She could either listen to her or take the microphone and the First Lady would leave. And then the First Lady told the crowd to decide. They did. And predictably, Sturtz was escorted out.
Yeah, thanks for that, Celeste. You know, I wonder why this became an issue. But for me, it's one of those things where we're always looking for any behavior that the Obamas can do that can be racialized on the low and become kind of fuel for commentary. You know, anything to call her on some kind of carpet. She's an adult, you know, so I'm not going to gauge her behavior. That's not my place. I'm not going to say whether she reacted appropriately, but for me, she reacted authentically. And I'm down with that. I mean, that's just me. Mario Loyola, what do you make of it?
I'm fully behind her, and actually I think she was too nice. I think that if hecklers got smacked right in the face more often than in a polite society.
Wow. NPR does not condone any acts of violence.
Wow. I think Mario tased that guy in Florida.
Look, I'm just in favor of a polite society. That's all what right. I
want. Mario Leola in favor of a polite society.
Corey Day smacking people lately? What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's the last problem that Michelle Obama needs. But, you know, first her husband was interrupted on the house of the floor on the floor of the house. And now she's interrupted. You know, the idea, you can make the argument that, you know, the First Lady of the United States needs to show a little bit more composure. But, you know, at the end of the day, what makes Michelle Obama really accessible is the fact that she's real. And so at the end of the day, the idea that someone would heckle her really on gay rights, this administration has done more for gay rights than any previously. It's ridiculous.
And wait a second, and Corey, it's not her job to show composure. It's your job to show composure when you go see it, bro. Let's get it right.
All right.
Dave's Irish.
Yeah, there you go.
In politics, timing is everything. I thought when Medea Benjamin did this to Barack Obama at the National Security University, it was actually appropriate because she was confronting a truth of what he was saying about drones. I thought this was wildly inappropriate, and Michelle Obama handled herself very well.
Oh, wait, I got nothing for that.
I don't know, man.
All right.
Well, I'm sure that our listeners will have something to say about that as well. But we want to wrap up the Barbershop for this week. I would say thank you to Jimmy Israel, writer and culture critic. He's also adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College. Dave Zirin is sports editor for The Nation magazine, host of Sirius XM Radio's Edge of Sports Radio. Corey Dade is contributing editor at The Root. All three of them are joining me here in our Washington, D.C. studios. And from St. Louis, Mario Loyola, director of the Center for 10th Amendment Studies at the Texas Public Policy Foundation, also columnist for the National Review. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Ciao, ciao.
Thank you.
Yep.
Remember, if you can't get enough Barbershop Buzz on the radio, look for the Barbershop Podcast. It's in the iTunes store or at npr.org. That's our program for today and the week. I'm Celeste Headlee. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Tune in for more talk Monday.